Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the doctrine of parens patriae, the parent-child relationship, when we come back. You know, in real estate transactions, we follow three rules. The rules are location, location, location. And in criminal law, we follow three rules when we're talking to the police or government agents, and that is, don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and shut up. Knowing what to say and when to say it and what not to say and who not to say it to is summed up in this maxim of law, and that is that all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. And that's why judges, in their opinions, make these kinds of short, terse statements in their opinions. Listen to this first judge. He said, "Who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights?" And that judge said that in United States versus Dickerson. Now, if I said something like that, I'd be accused of being a tax protester, wouldn't I? Listen to the second judge. He said, "You can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment." And he said that in Belknap versus United States. If I said something like that, I'd be accused of obstructing justice. Now, listen to this third judge. Here's what he said. "The constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and the farsighted." He said that in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is also available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. GeorgeGordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. Remember, GeorgeGordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time I said I'd take you through American jurisprudence, and we'll select out two or three of the key subject matters. There's 164 sections in AmJur on this doctrine of parent and child, or the doctrine of parens patriae. If you have questions about children, child custody, divorce, etc., the place that you begin is with the legal dictionary. And then from the legal dictionary, you go to the legal encyclopedia. From the legal encyclopedia, you go to the cases that have been decided. And then from those decided cases, you take a look at the facts of your case and how do the facts in your case measure up to all of these decided cases, the definitions in the dictionary, and the commentaries in the legal encyclopedias. That'll tell you whether you got a winning case or not. That'll tell you whether you're on the right side of the issue or the left side. Now, let's talk about control of education. I've mentioned to you time and again that you have the right, you have the power to educate your child. Now, the state has compulsory education laws. The state does not have any compulsory education place. The state does not compel you to educate your child at home, educate your child in parochial school, or educate your child in public school. The state is neutral on where, the place that you educate your child. The state requires that you educate your child to these minimum standards. Now, I would submit to you that anybody who has a child would want to educate that child to standards in excess of the minimum. I've never heard of anybody say, I don't want my kid to learn too much or get too smart. I just want him to learn the minimum. I've never been one to shoot for mediocrity. You know, when I want to learn something, if I want to know something, I go pick up a book or an encyclopedia or a dictionary or something I want to know. I pick it up, and I usually get right into it, and I want to know all that I can find out about that. And that's where I'm at with this doctrine of parents' patria. When I got into it, I said, well, I want to know all that there is about parents' patria. I want to know what the state's role is. I want to know how social lady got involved. How about probation man and family court judge? And you know, the psychologists and the psychiatrists and the doctors and what about medicine and all the subject matters that go into it. I'm pretty knowledgeable about it. And I'm sharing that information with you. Better yet, I'm telling you, here's where you go to get the information. Don't believe me? Go look it up. I don't make these laws and rules. But my observation is that social lady doesn't know the laws and the rules very well either. Probation man, he doesn't know the laws and the rules very well either. But they know the laws and the rules a whole lot better than the average Joe Sixpack. Now, here's my observation. Joe, you're going to get divorced. And you're going to get into this family court. You're going to get raped, robbed, and pillaged. Before you go in to get raped, robbed, and pillaged, why don't you just take a look at American Jurisprudence, Volume 59, and look at these 164 sections on children, parent-child relationship. Probably take you 6 hours to read it. I'm a slow reader. I read 237 words a minute. I read this in 6 hours. And I think when you get through with it, Joe, you're going to be just about as knowledgeable as little Georgie Gordon concerning parents' patria. I mean, they come right out and tell you just, and they're footnoted, and they've got all the cases, and then if you want to really get into it, you pick up some of these cases and start researching some of the cases, and boy, you're going to get real smart real fast. So let's take a look at education. It's section 18 on page 100. Except as modified by statute, the general rule is that a parent has the right to control the education of his child. However, the right is subordinate to the police power of the state and may be restricted and regulated by municipal law providing minimum educational standards. On the other hand, although some authorities have gone so far as to say that the business of educating children belongs primarily to the public, and the parents are ordinarily entrusted with it only because it can seldom be put into better hands, it is clear that the state's power in this area is not unlimited. For example, parents have a right to educate their children elsewhere than in the public schools, provided the state's minimum educational requirements are met. Now, there's a footnote number there, number 6. And it comes from a case called State versus Garber, cited at 197 Kansas 367. It's also cited in Pacific Reporter, Volume 419, page 896. Now, here's what you do there. If you live in Kansas, it's directly on point. If you live here in Missouri, it isn't directly on point. So what we're looking for is a case similar to State versus Garber, but decided here in Missouri. So now what we do is a Lexis search. So now we go to Lexis, or we go to Find Law, and we say, okay, let's see, are there any cases like State versus Garber in the state of Missouri which say that a parent can select the school that he wants to send his kid to? They'll find one. If it's there, they'll find it. Thus, a court has no power to order a parent to keep his children in the public schools. and a law requiring all children of certain ages to attend public school has been held unconstitutional as an unreasonable interference with the liberty of parents and guardians to direct the upbringing and education of children under their control. Now, your state may have an unconstitutional law on the books, and it may require that you educate your child in public school. But you know, if you've got a law that's unconstitutional, then if you'll bring it to the attention of the judge with a motion and a brief, if you brief that up, the judge will look at it and say, oh, good, that law's unconstitutional. We don't have to consider that. Now, don't believe for a moment that just because a law is unconstitutional that the judge won't apply it. If you don't object, failure to object timely is fatal. And oftentimes, unconstitutional principles and procedures are followed by the courts not because they're correct, not because they're right, not because the judge is dumb and ignorant and doesn't know any better, but because you didn't object. If the other side says, we want our child educated in public school, and you don't object, and the other side says, because the law requires it, and you don't object and correct them, the judge isn't going to correct them. That's not his place. And he'll order the kid sent over there with your ex-wife and educate him in public school. Oftentimes, people will complain about the judges making wrong decisions. The judge isn't making the wrong decision. You didn't object. The judge made the only decision that he could make. Let me show you. The courts operate on a principle of parliamentary procedure. So, your wife's attorney moves for custody of the child. And you come in and you testify that your wife is a whore, a slut, and a drug addict. And the judge gives the child to the wife because she's the only one that made a motion for custody of the child. There isn't any contested issue before the court. All right, now let's create a contested issue. Your wife's attorney files a motion for custody of the children. She's a whore. She's a slut. She's a drug addict. You make a motion for custody of the children. Now there's a contested custody issue. She wants them. You want them. Now the judge has to decide who's going to get them. Now there's something to decide. Now, you come in and testify she's a whore, she's a slut, she's a drug addict, and you bring up these 12 custody standards, and then you testify and you bring in witnesses, evidence, and testimony and prove that you can meet the 12 custody standards and she can't. You win, she loses. You know, it's not any more difficult than that. It's just a matter of parliamentary procedure. Judges don't make mistakes very often. In the federal courts, the judges make mistakes at the lower level about 1% of the time. 1% of district court judges are overruled. I was looking at a recent issue of the National Law Journal. They had a special issue out on the Circuit Courts of Appeal, 11 Circuit Courts of Appeal, and they pointed out that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal is overturned more often. Like in one session, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals was overturned 18 times. They had another circuit on there, I forgot which one it was now, zero. Oh, it was D.C. The District of Columbia Circuit was overturned zero times last year. And the Ninth Circuit 18 times. Now, the Ninth Circuit's pretty liberal. Now, what that tells us is that out of the thousands of cases that come through the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, they made 18 errors. And I mean, they got thousands of cases coming through there. All of the courts do. In the District of Columbia, they had thousands of cases come through. They didn't make any mistakes at all. Zero, zilch. They weren't overturned once. So, boys and girls, courts, judges, don't make mistakes very often. The mistakes are made by the litigants. It's the mistake that your lawyer made by not making the motion for custody. Now, sometimes you are being sold down the river. Let me give you an illustration as to how that's done. Lawyers belong to a fraternity. They belong to the Bar Association. All lawyers are entrepreneurs. All lawyers are entrepreneurs. They're small, independent businessmen. And every time they take on a case, it's like a general contractor building a house. And he's gonna do everything in his power to make money off of that house. He's gonna make money off of that case. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, that your attorney is hired by you, and you pay him $5,000, and you say, "I want custody of my kids, and I want you to handle my divorce, and do all these things that good lawyers are supposed to do for their clients." Now, your wife, you know, the whore, the slut, the drug addict, this bad woman. I'm always getting told about these bad women. She hires an attorney, but her parents are pretty wealthy, and her parents have a lot of money, and they want custody of the children because they don't like you, Bob. So they go to their daughter's attorney, and they say, "Look, we want custody of our child. What's it going to cost?" And their attorney says, "Well, if you want custody of that child or those children, it could cost you $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. And they say, "We'll pay it." And they get their checkbook out and they pay your wife's attorney $40,000 to win this case and to get custody. Not only is he going to study the books a whole lot more carefully, and not only is he going to study the 12 custody standards, and not only is he going to interview witnesses and do a very good job, he's also going to go to your attorney, Bob, he's going to go to your attorney. See, they're buddies. They belong to the same fraternity. And he's going to say to your attorney, "You know, your client isn't a very good father." And he might even go so far as to suggest that there could be $10,000 or $20,000 involved if your attorney, Bob, was to lose the custody portion of the divorce case. Bob, is that illegal? "Oh, yeah, sure it is. But hey, listen, people take bribes. I got to tell you a little story right here. One of my instructors, an attorney, a good attorney, as Jerry Spence would call him, hidden away in a little town someplace. One time, my attorney, my instructor, he actually was my attorney five times to be exact, And he instructed me in law, and he taught me law. And he was telling me a story one time, and he said one time he was defending the Mormon bishop's son in Cuna, Idaho. The Mormon bishop's son. For drunk driving. Now listen, Mormons don't even drink. Can you imagine how embarrassing it is for the Mormon bishop's son to get caught drunk driving? And it's worse than that. Third time's a felony. He's going to the big house for 5 years. This kid, if he's convicted over in Canyon County, he's going to the big house for 5 years. And so the Mormon bishop comes over to Ben and he says, Ben, I'm in a jam. That's my boy. You know, fathers are very solicitous about their boys, even though they're drunken sots. We're still concerned about our drunken, sot sons. Just like mothers are real solicitous and real concerned about their whore, slut, drug addict daughters. People are that way. So Ben took the case on. I don't know what the fee was, but the fee was commensurate with the case. So Ben went over to the prosecuting attorney, and then it just so happened that the prosecuting attorney in Canyon County happened to be a, you guessed it, a Mormon. Ben's a Mormon. The boy's a Mormon. The prosecutor's a Mormon. And in Idaho, I could just about tell you that the judge is probably a Mormon. Now, it doesn't mean that they're all Mormons, but, you know. Let me tell you, boys and girls, reality, you know, when you're out in Mormon country, it's pretty logical that the Mormon people are going to elect a Mormon governor. And that Mormon governor, when he appoints judges, he's going to be appointing Mormon judges. And that's just the way life is. Ben goes into the prosecutor and he says, you know, Tom, it sure ain't going to look good for the church and ain't going to look good for the Mormon bishop to have his boy convicted. And the prosecutor says, well, you know, what's this boy doing? Well, we got him into AA. We've got him on rehabilitation. We got this kid. We're straightening him out. This isn't going to happen again, Tom. Okay. What do you want, Ben? He said, we don't want this boy convicted. Prosecutor says, I hear you, Ben. They shook hands and they walked out. I hear you, Ben. So they went to trial. And then the press was there. This was big news. The Idaho Statesman was there, although it wasn't in Ada County. It was over in Canyon County, over in Caldwell. And the prosecutor got in there, and he jumped up and down, and he pawed the ground and bit the bushes, and he did everything that prosecutors are supposed to do to convict guilty defendants. And this prosecutor did it. But the prosecutor made one strategic error. A legal error. He failed to prove that the crime occurred in Canyon County. That's called a prima facie case. And he had to prove that the crime occurred in Canyon County. And he didn't do that. He did everything else, though. Good prosecutor. He did everything else. So Ben got up there, and he pawed the ground, bit the bushes, and he did all those things that defense lawyers are supposed to do to win an acquittal for their guilty clients. And this case, now, was tried before the judge. It was not tried before a jury. Ben, the defense attorney, waived jury trial. Judge is a fact finder. He's a Mormon. Prosecutor, he's a Mormon. Ben is a Mormon. Defendant's a Mormon. The people paying the bills are Mormon. Does this mean all Mormons are corrupt? No, not any more than Catholics, Protestants, and Jews. So Ben, when they summed up their case, he moved to dismiss for failure of the state to prove its prima facie case. And the judge said, okay, I'll take it under advisement. So the judge went through the transcript, and 21 days later, he called a show cause hearing. And now the press isn't there. This is just a show cause hearing, just a procedural matter. And Ben is there, the prosecutor's there. I don't even know if the defendant was there. He didn't have to be. Judge is going to make a ruling. And he says to the prosecutor, he said, Tom, I went through the transcript and Ben got you. You failed to prove that the crime was committed in Canyon County. You failed to prove your prima facie case. Tom, I don't have any choice in the matter. I have to dismiss as a matter of law. And he did. He dismissed. Kid wins the case on a technical error. Well, after all, that's the way the game was supposed to be played, and that's the way it was played out. 2 years later, there's more to the story. 2 years later, Tom is running for re-election. It just so happens that Ben is defending a murder case. Now, Ben, when he told me this story, he assured me that his client, the man accused of murder, was in fact guilty of sin. He killed this person, all right. He was guilty. Well, the prosecutor called Ben on the phone one day and says, Ben, why don't you come into the office? I want to talk to you about this case. They came into the office. Ben sat down, chit-chatted for a little while. You know how lawyers are, you know, they belong to the same fraternity. They got a lot in common. Both went to college. Both have degrees. Both of them are licensed lawyers. One represents the state, and one represents the client. And Tom said, "Ben, I'm running for re-election, and winning this case is very important to me. I'm running on a law and order platform." And he said, "Ben, you owe me one." And Ben said, "I hear you, Tom. I hear you, Tom." They shook hands and they walked out. And when the case went to trial, the prosecutor came in and he proved his prima facie case. He proved that this murderer committed that crime in Canyon County. And he jumped up and down and he pawed the ground, he bit the bushes and did all those things that prosecuting attorneys are supposed to do to win cases and convict guilty defendants. And he did. And Ben did his job. He came in and he jumped up and down. He pawed the ground. He bit the bushes. And he did all those things that lawyers are supposed to do to win acquittals for their guilty defendants. Except that he failed to prove that his client was innocent. And his client was convicted and sent to prison. And the good news is the prosecutor was reelected on his law and order platform. After all, Ben owed him one, didn't he? All right, Tom, now let's get back to you. You got a lawyer, and your in-laws over here have a little money. Maybe they got a lot of money, and they want custody. And they are going to go to their attorney, who is going to go to your attorney, and they're going to work out the custody arrangements behind the scenes. And when this case goes to trial, your lawyer is going to jump up and down, rant and rave, paw the ground, bite the bushes, and do all those things that lawyers do for husbands seeking custody of their children. But he's going to fail to allege and prove one, two, or three of those custody standards. And you're opposing, that is your wife's attorney and her in-laws. And when they come in, they're going to prove that your whore, slut, drug-addicted wife can meet all 12 of these custody standards and that she's a model mother. And if she's not, she's going to parenting classes. And social lady is working for her and recommends that the children be given to the mother. I don't know how many of you fathers out there have called and told me that story. I'm fully familiar with the story, boys. I know how it works. I know how it works. Most lay people don't. And then when you tell them, they look at you and say, "No, this is America. This is the land of the free and the home of the brave. That can't happen here." Okay. But you're not going to win custody. Not that way. Now, if you want to win custody of your children and you're up against that kind of power play, you got to have some skill and ability that goes beyond the infighting and the bribery and the bribe-taking. Hell, I was involved in a case one time in which the judge was getting paid $4,792.50. And I was supposed to pay it. And the way it was to be paid was, I was to write the check to Crown Ziller back and have the paper delivered to her husband's law firm. Are judges on the take? Not all of them. Are some judges on the take? Absolutely. Are lawyers entrepreneurs? You bet. You bet. It's the way that game's played, boys and girls. So if you want to learn how to get custody of your children, if you want to learn how to do this, then you need courtroom strategy and procedure. You need family law. Family law. 58 chapters on information. This is just one little piece of the whole pie. One little piece of a whole pie called family court and family relations. Called Parens Patriae. All right, hang on a second. Let's take a little break here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, economics, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, now the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Talking about parens patriae, the custody issue or the custody process in family relations. Now, when we took our break, or just at the point where we took our break, I told you about a judge that was expecting that I pay $4,692.50, I believe was the amount. And, of course, this is done through opposing counsel, and lawyers get paid their share, and the judge gets paid a little share, and then we're going to get custody of the child. Now, God tells us not to take bribes and not to pay bribes. A gift perverts the eyes of the wise. A gift perverts the eyes of the wise. And through the Bible, a number of scriptures, a number of statutes prohibit this thing of bribery. Many nations work on bribery. You go to Mexico, hey, listen, bribery is the in thing. And many American companies, when they do business overseas, pay bribes. They're not supposed to, but they do. And they've been caught, and sometimes they get punished, and sometimes they don't. So I want to point out that it's never in your best interest to pay a bribe. But when you're faced with the other side bribing your attorney, can you see why it's so important for you to represent yourself? Eliminate your attorney. Go represent yourself. Then there's nobody to bribe, is there? Now, judges do not take bribes directly from counsel one side or the other. Usually as both sides, both counsel, both lawyers approach the judge. And they have their story worked out. And they say, Judge, this guy is a real rounder. He's a real badass. And this guy ought not to have custody. And here's why. And one lawyer has paid the other lawyer a bunch. And then those two lawyers go to Social Lady. And they prime Social Lady. They know the 12 custody standards. And they're working with probation man. They're working with Social Lady. Your lawyer and your wife's lawyer, they're both working against you. If you want to even that out, you get rid of your lawyer, and then it's one-on-one. This is a real knocked-down, drag-out brawl. And you should be talking to the social lady, and you should be promoting you as the custodial parent, and you should be informing social lady, not lying to social lady, informing social lady about your wife's drug abuse, child abuse. Now, there's another side to the coin. Another side to the coin. Maybe you don't deserve custody of your children. Did you ever think of that, Joe? Did it ever occur to you that the sexual abuse that you have perpetrated against your daughters or your sons, your sodomy, or your own filthy, vile practices disqualify you from being the custodial parent? I don't know. You know, people tell me when they call and telephone or they come to school here, they always tell me they're innocent. They always tell me what good guys they are and how bad their spouse is. And from my perspective in life, you know, I'm just a hired gun. I'm a law school instructor. I don't take sides. I don't really care. I just teach law. My job is to, this is the way the game is played. You go play the game this way and you're likely to win. You play the game the way you're playing it, and you're likely to lose. You know, did you want to win or did you want to lose? That's all I ask. And oftentimes, the students who come here are just as incompetent and unqualified as parents, as the other side that they're claiming is, she's a whore, she's a slut, and this is the standard story, ladies. You're a whore, you're a slut, and you're on drugs. Every guy that comes in here tells me that. And then when a woman comes in, which isn't quite as often, but once in a while they do, they always tell me that, well, he abuses the children, he beats them, or he's a sexual pervert. Hell, that may be true, ladies. You know, you lived with him. The people that need to know are social lady. I mean, after all, years ago, we decided we wanted feudal society and that we wanted the system that we've got. And this is the system we've got. I think it sucks, but then, you know, I don't make the laws, I don't make the rules, I'm just here to tell you this is the way the game is played. If you want custody, this is the way it's played. You want alimony and child support, here's the way it's played. And you play to social lady. Social lady has more power than anybody in this game. Well, I'm not. I shouldn't say power, it's the wrong word. She has more influence in this game than anybody else. The guy that has the ultimate power, of course, is the judge. But the judge relies upon social lady and probation men. He relies upon them. Now, sometimes they will call in an independent social worker to write an independent report. And that independent social worker, and this is what you need, boys, if you got social lady working against you, you need to go out and hire an independent social worker and then work with that social worker. I've done that many, many times. When I can see that social lady is obviously working for the other side, maybe that she's bought off. Maybe that she, honest to God, believes that that lying, slut, whore, drug addict wife of yours is in fact the best custodial candidate for custody of your children. She may, honest to God, believe it. I've seen that happen. Social lady sometimes gets deceived. There are a few social men out there too. They're not all social ladies. And these people are paid professionals, and honest to God, they believe that they know more about parenting, they know more about children, they know more about discipline, education, they know more about everything than you and God Almighty together. And that's what you're working against, so might as well wake up to reality and play to the choir. So you play to social lady and you tell social lady, hey, listen, if there's anything that I can do to help you with your report or give you any more information, they're going to have some interviews. When you go to these interviews with social lady and probation man or with the independent social worker, you better be up front, partner. You better come clean. You better tell them, hey, listen, here's what I did and here's what I'm doing and I'm real sorry and I won't ever do that again. I mean, you know, if you're the guilty party, you know you better fess up and you better shape up. And I think a lot of times that that's probably what happens. You know, these bad mothers tell social lady, hey, listen, I'll clean up my act. And I told you, they're not going to terminate your parental rights. As long as there's any hope that you'll shut up, sit down, fold your hands, and do what you're told. Let me take you on over here to medicine. Medicine is a big problem here, medical care here for a lot of people. And that's because they have religious beliefs. And so let's flip over here. Let's see, medical care is number 15. I got to back up here a couple sections. Medical care. I told you about the Elaine story. I told you about the hospital and so on. I'm opposed, you know, to vaccinations. And I know that in a custody case, that's going to come back and bite me in the butt. So I always keep quiet about vaccinations. And I don't raise the vaccination, but when vaccination comes up, and listen, it's coming up. Because they're going to ask, are these children vaccinated? And if you lie to them, and you say, yes, they are, and they say, okay, we'll bring in their shot records, and you don't have the shot record, then they caught you. You might as well fess up. You tell them, I'm opposed to vaccinations on religious grounds. Under Seeger versus U.S., we're exempt. We're Hebrews, and that's the law we practice. I remember one time the social lady was really concerned about our practicing the Passover. And, in fact, she told my wife, she says, we will give you this girl. You can have custody if you will agree that you will give up the Passover. My wife said, if we give up the Passover and make such an agreement with Baal, I can rest assured that that child and custody will be terminated because my God will terminate the custody. But we will not give up the Passover. We will obey God and we will keep His commandments. And in spite of that, we still may not get custody because maybe our God has determined that we are not entitled to custody. I don't know. And she told social lady, but know this, that we will obey God rather than men. And you know, social lady was opposed to us. She was opposed to us before my wife got in there and gave her that little sermon, but it got a little bit worse as time went on. Social lady colluded with probation man and with the other side. And I mean, the social lady was definitely biased. I'm sure that there was a lot of money trading hands and there was a lot of undercover BS going on. But when it came down to the final decree, custody was awarded to my wife and myself. Bottom line. So I just want to point out to you that you can overcome it, but it's not always easy. And medicine poses a problem. Vaccination is number one. But also, some of you people out there are opposed to hospitals and general allopathic medical care. I'm opposed in general to allopathic medical care, but be intelligent people. Let me ask you a question. Let's suppose you had an automobile accident. Your legs are broken, you're beaten up pretty bad, and you're taken to the hospital. Maybe your children are beaten up pretty bad in this auto wreck, and they're taken to the hospital. It's one thing for you to say, I don't want a blood transfusion. It's something else for you to say, do not give a blood transfusion to my children. Now, if you're opposed to blood transfusions, which many religious people are, there's another solution to the problem. Why don't you look ahead? And why don't you donate blood in advance? Your blood in advance. You can use distilled water as a fluid. There's an artificial blood, and you can use your own blood. Why don't you think about this and say to yourself, let me head that off. And you say, now use my blood. Use my children's blood in this case. Find out what your children's blood type is. Now, let's suppose that there's going to be an appendicitis, and maybe you're going to have to cut out this kid's appendix. If you people will obey God and keep the health laws, you will never have an appendicitis. To get an appendicitis, you have to violate the health laws. You've got to be eating crap to get an appendicitis. An appendicitis is the result. It's not a cause. It's a result of broken health laws. Why don't you get in harmony with the health laws of the Bible and appendicitis disappears? There's one more factor. Over in Matthew chapter 4, see if I can find a Bible here. Matthew chapter 4. Satan took the Messiah up on top of a mountain. No, up on top of the pinnacle of the temple. And he said, the devil took him up, verse 5, to the holy city, set him on the pinnacle of the temple, and said to him, if you be the Son of God, cast yourself down, for it is written that he shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time you dash your foot against a stone. Jesus said to him, it's written again, you shall not tempt the Lord your God. But there is an important principle of law here that maybe you hadn't thought of or didn't know. In Exodus 23:20, God says, I will be an enemy. This is about verse 23, but it's Exodus 23:23, about verse 25. He says, I'll be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversary. And that's what you're looking for. And here in Matthew 4, you see that you've got a guardian angel. That guardian angel has the duty to protect you from accidents. This doesn't count when you're up in airplanes and jumping out for thrills. This doesn't count when you're jumping off of El Capitan. But it does count when an accident occurs. Now, you know, if you'd obey God and keep His commandments, you won't have accidents. Time and chance happens to us all. But when you're under the terms and conditions of the old covenant law, time and chance doesn't happen to you because you're under the law. And under the law means that you're under the protection and the benefit of the law. See, the law has two sides. It's like every coin. The law requires that you don't commit adultery. If you don't commit adultery, you will not get AIDS, herpes, or VD. You got a guardian angel that will protect you from accidents if you'll obey the Ten Commandments. I'm just pointing that out. You'll have a whole lot fewer problems in life if you practice this law. Now, most people don't, and that's why you got these problems to start with. So when somebody calls the law school, what I'm talking to is a criminal who has been in violation of laws and is calling me and is saying, in effect, Mr. Gordon, I need forgiveness of sin. Will you do that? And the answer is, I don't have any power to forgive your sins. I can't forgive your sins. There's nothing that I can do for you. There's a lot you can do for yourself, but there's not much that I can do for you. Now, I can teach you the law, and I can tell you plainly, when you get a marriage license, you're in violation of the law of God, making a covenant with Baal. You ought to rethink that. If you've got a marriage license, you ought to think about getting rid of it. If you're not married yet, you ought to consider, do I really want to break this law? Now, if you're married and you're having babies and you're in the childbearing age, you know, things like that happen, you ought to be thinking about, when you go to the hospital to have that baby, are you going to get a birth certificate? Are you going to pass your seed through the fire to Moloch? Are you going to violate Leviticus 20? You ought to think about that. Now, I read you a couple of stories here from people that have been through this or been down this road before and that have walked a mile in that guy's moccasin. You can have a baby. You can have a baby in a hospital. You do not have to get a birth certificate. Just tell the nurse, kiss off, I don't want it. And if she says, why? Why don't you tell her? Because I don't want to give my child to the state. And then, above all, don't tell them what the name is, because they're going to file a birth certificate. The hospital is going to do it anyway. They're going to put in their baby Jane or baby Doe, or they're going to put, we had a male baby born here, but with no name, and the parents never signed the birth certificate, and we're going to report the birth. The law requires that the hospital report the birth. If you want privacy, you have the baby at home. Of course, now today in modern America, childbirth is a major medical problem. It never was in past history. It used to be a normal bodily function. You know, like defecating and urinating and having babies, it's a normal bodily function. Now, sometimes people get constipated, and sometimes people will get stones. And they can't urinate, and they can't go big. But that's because they broke some laws. If you break certain laws, you may have a real need for a pediatrician. If you violate the health laws, you may die in childbirth, lady. But if you obey God and keep His commandments, you will not die in childbirth, and you will not need a pediatrician or a doctor to deliver your baby. But you know, I deal with criminals. Lawyers primarily deal with criminals. And the people who call me here at the law school are people who are breaking laws. They break health laws. They smoke cigarettes and get lung cancer. And they violate laws, and then they get into custody disputes. They take drugs, they're alcoholics, they're sodomites, and they violate every law that you can imagine. And then they call and they say, I need a solution to my problem. As if I can solve every problem, every legal problem that everybody presents to me, in spite of the fact that they're out here breaking these laws. You know, Peter Jennings smoked cigarettes, he got lung cancer, and he died before his 70 years. It was the penalty that the man paid for a choice and a decision that he made. I did not make Peter Jennings smoke cigarettes. I'm not insensitive, I don't think. I feel sorry for the man, but it's a cause and effect relationship, boys and girls. And let me tell you that every time you break a law, there's a penalty. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. Not on planet Earth. I can't speak for Mars. I can't speak for the universe. I can't speak for outer space. I don't know. But on this planet, the guy that created it told us plainly in the scripture. He said, I got these laws, these standards, and if you break them, if you violate them, here's the penalty. Here's what I'm going to do to you. And in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, he tells you, I'm the guy that's doing it. You might as well give God credit. I mean, he's like a terrorist. The terrorists, you know, when they blow up a bomb, they like to send a letter into the newspaper and say, you know, Al-Qaeda takes credit for blowing up this embassy. In Leviticus 26, God uses the personal pronoun. I mean, I'm talking about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, not the rest of these gods out here. The God of Abraham, he says, in 20 places, the personal pronoun I, 20 times says, I did this to you. I will do this to you. I am doing this to you. Pay attention. I'm telling you plainly, here's what I'm going to do. Now, if you don't want him to do that to you, then maybe you want to shape up. Maybe you want to say, well, gee, maybe I better stop giving him the finger. Because that's what's happening here under the doctrine of powers, the doctrine of parens patriae. We Americans, and along with the Canadians, Australians, New Zealands, and the British, have been giving our God the finger now for about 100 years. I mean, you know, we've always been stiff-necked and rebellious, and we've been a bunch of jerks and horses patooties, but bottom line is, about 1900, we got real serious about it. And I mean, we're giving our God the finger in no uncertain terms. We're in violation of 82 laws. Out of 133 laws in the Bible, we're in violation of 82 of them, and we make sport of it. We brag about it. We think that's big time. Our president goes out here and he's diddling one of his office workers over here, and we think, hey, that Bill Clinton's a real stud. He's a damn pervert's what he is. Well, I don't know if he still is. He was then, and I doubt if he's changed much. We Americans, you know, we voted. I think the public opinion polls for Bill Clinton were running 72%. Hell, there was only 28% of us that were opposed to Bill Clinton and his clandestine sexual intimacies with the staff and anybody else that lay still long enough for him to nail her. I mean, if a woman would lay still, he'd nail her. Now, you figure that out. And this is the President of the United States. And we hold that up as an example for the entire world. Now, you wonder why the Muslims hate our guts. They hate our morals like you can't believe. I don't blame them. My God, I'm absolutely ashamed of the moral degeneracy in the United States of America. And most of the people in the world are sympathetic toward that line of thinking. So just tuck that one away in your heart, boys and girls, and keep in mind that when you call the school, you know, we'll listen to you, and we'll try to encourage you, and I'll try to teach you, but I'm going to teach you to obey God and keep His commandments. If you break a law, there's a penalty to pay. So if you want to smoke, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. Hey, listen, you want to go down here to Flo's Whorehouse and tear off a little on Friday night? Hey, get after it. But, you know, if you're an adult past the age of 19, you ought to have better sense than that, and you ought to know that that's against the law and that there are penalties to pay. Unsafe sex, you know, everybody's talking about it. Unsafe sex. And what do they advise? Oh, go get a condom. Now, why don't you stop practicing unsafe sex and you won't need a condom? Don't practice adultery and don't practice fornication. Why don't you go find yourself a good wife? There's probably three left in America. And if you can't find a good wife here, then why don't you go to Russia or someplace else, see if you can't find a good woman. And then you'll solve that problem. All right, that's the story on the doctrine of Perrin's Patrick. Just a little common sense gets into play. Let me give you a pitch here. We have a school here called Family Court, Family Law. And if you're having a divorce or you've been divorced and you've got a custody problem and you want to get your custody back, hey, I can teach you how to get the custody of your children. I kind of touched on it here in this series of programs. But if you want to get down to the nitty-gritty and you want to go after it and say, I want that kid, you probably can win that case. You probably can get that kid if, I'm going to put this if, this qualifier, if the other party cannot meet those 12 custody standards. If your wife has custody of those kids and she meets these 12 custody standards, you ain't getting those kids away from her no matter what. Tain't going to happen. If she's in violation of those standards over there, then there's every reason to believe that you can take those children back. And I told you about the parent-child, AMJUR. There's other legal encyclopedias, Corpus Juris Secundum, Corpus Juris and Words and Phrases. You can read those sections in those legal encyclopedias. They're written in plain English, and I would venture a guess that you could understand just exactly what the doctrine of parens patriae is. I explained it, laid it out in spades. Now, as they say down at the Blue Room, as the dealer is dealing the cards, read them and weep. Well, we're out of time. I got to give you the last reminder. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. The number is 417-273-4967, or you can send an email to our email address off the website, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All of these Law Hour programs are archived for your convenience on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, new topic. Thanks for listening, and good night, friends.